as broadsides come rumbling at you. 3.5 hours on the streets. Particular focus today on Streetwise, merchant and police crackdown downtown, and the controversy surrounding the chalk crime arrests of Friday, June 28th. Today is June 30th, Sunday. Stay with us. Where is home? Well, for a lot of folks, it ain't, or it is where they happen to be able to find themselves. And Land is the song you just heard from 15. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Robert Norse. This is 3.5 hours laying in front of us of possible conversation time on the air. Certainly going to be a significant portion of it taken up with reviewing what's happened in the last week, which actually is very little, but there's a lot of sound and fury and flurry, and I suspect that folks out there are going to want to call in and talk about it. 427-3772 is the phone number. We did have a few guests sort of tentatively scheduled to show up here, but they have lost their way, those poor little lambs. And listen, you lambs, I say bah, 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 bah. If you're not going to make it into the show, please give a call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's a line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It's also a line that those of you who are out there who don't really feel ready for prime time can call if you want to talk to me personally, you want to put something on the air, you want to arrange an interview, you want to pass on some not entirely public information. That's the number to call, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833. You'll also find a lot of phone numbers mentioned in a long taped message, which you can bypass by pressing the pound key. And it's, I'd say, interesting for a number of reasons. It's usually about a week or two behind the times, but there's still a lot of useful numbers. Again, at 423-HUFF, which is my voicemail and the voicemail for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which also meets Wednesdays at Baker Square at 8:30 in the morning. That's a restaurant on Ocean Street at 1107 Ocean. Everybody's welcome. Can't afford the coffee. We will stake you to it, or actually we'll just pass it your way, maybe even orange juice. It's an opportunity to talk about organizing to fight anti-homeless laws, to fight for legislation that actually is helpful to everybody and not just a discriminatory kind of stuff that is designed to drive away people in a short-sighted and rather futile campaign waged by merchants and actually conservative business interests in cities across the nation. It isn't just Santa Cruz, to remove those who they consider unsightly from the area completely so that they can have a Disneyland-like appearance and present the illusion that all is well, which, of course, it isn't. And I know America and advertising sells illusions. That's the business of America. But I think the business of community is to deal with reality, not illusions. And that's why I encourage you to call in on the show and talk about the reality as it's affecting you in Santa Cruz, 427-3772, 427-FRSC. We also broadcast on the net, www.microradio, small letters, one word, microradio.net, /FRSC, for Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you want to reach Free Radio Santa Cruz and just leave a PSA or have an inquiry or possibly want your own show, or want to leave a message for someone in the studio, you can also call the voicemail here at Free Radio, which is 427-4523. Again, 427-4523. I'm going to run through those numbers in a moment again, in case you want to run to get a pencil to write any of them down. And we can kind of, hopefully you're getting hooked up here with numbers that are helpful to you. Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, HUFF, is 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833. The phone line to call this show live for the next 3 hours, 3.5 hours, is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Isn't that cute? Free Radio Santa Cruz. The phone number to call Free Radio Santa Cruz off the air is 427-4523, 427-4523. And while I'm at it, since some folks may have your pencils ready, if you're interested in reaching either Camp Hope or Camp Paradise, those are homeless encampments run by homeless people with different sort of systems of running it and different levels of financial support from particular individuals in the community. You can reach them. You can reach Camp Paradise through the former Santa Cruz Service Corps. I call it the former Santa Cruz Service Corps because the Santa Cruz Service Corps board dissolved itself last Sunday, declaring essentially in its action that it didn't want to be influenced by, didn't make the statement publicly, but this seemed to be the sentiment, the likes of Paul Lee and the pressures from Tom Shaver, who mainly was conveying the pressure from Paul Lee and from Larry Templeton, who essentially were turning the Santa Cruz Service Board into a hand-picked bunch of folks that only those people who live at Camp Paradise, and only those people who live at Camp Paradise would be allowed. Only those who Larry approved of could be allowed at Camp Paradise, and the attempts to modify the political system there failed. People were expelled, and rather than fight over the Santa Cruz Service Corps name and over the Santa Cruz Service Corps funds, of which apparently there aren't as many as there used to be, or as much as there used to be, this board is meeting again. This former board is kind of, it's a new board, I guess, of a new organization. They see themselves in that way now. They were elected 3 weeks ago, and Paul Lee declared the elections suspended because he didn't like the results. He didn't have any particular criticism of how the election was done in terms of corruption or ballot stuffing or anything of that sort. He just said, it's my organization, I do what I want with it. And I guess the board of Santa Cruz Service Corps said, we don't want that, we're going to start a new group, a new board, and that's essentially what they did. And they meet today at 6 at the house of Thomas Levitt, who's a Green Party member of the former Santa Cruz Service Corps board, or a former member of the board, or a board of the former member. I'm bored of the whole thing, actually. And if you want to come around and find out what's going on, it's open to everyone, Camp Paradise, Camp Hope, the public. They're working on supporting encampments for homeless people, specifically Camp Hope, but also other encampments. And other issues, I think, will be brought up, like the issues of what's happening with civil rights for homeless people downtown, what about the right to sleep, the usual issues that just we have to keep addressing because they aren't addressed. And they're faced every night and every day by people outside. And the rest of us in our town have to sit back and watch while all this goes on. Again, that's going to be at 6 o'clock tonight. It's called, I call it Encampments United, but they haven't picked a name yet. They will be meeting at 1135 North Branciforte Avenue. 1135 North Branciforte Avenue. And that's not Branciforte Drive out near Dominica. No, this is Branciforte Avenue, closer into town. About three blocks from Water Street as you head toward the freeway, 1135 North Branciforte Avenue. If you want more information, you can contact Thomas Levitt at 425-3646. 425-3646. And actually, that's at 6 o'clock tonight. And 5:30, the Homeless Issues Working Group of the Green Party is having a brief meeting at 5:30 at the same place, 1135 North Branciforte. And you can come to that. That's open to the public. The Green Party is recently, under the influence of Thomas Levitt and other people like Linda LeMaster, not to mention myself and Becky Johnson and Bernard Klitzner and other sort of old-time activists trying to, we've effectively had an impact to get some, they're more than cosmetic and they're less than substantive resolutions from the Green Party. There was a $50 donation given to the Right to Sleep Walkers, who we should also hear from today. Those are the folks who are going to Sacramento, be there on July 10th, to urge the governor to decriminalize homeless people who sleep at night in the various municipalities where the merchants and the local governments have made it illegal for anyone outside or in vehicles or on the streets or in any kind of public property to sleep, even though there are no adequate shelter facilities for those who are outside. So in essence, it turns them into criminals at night for doing what they have to do. And that Green Party did give this group the right to walk, the right to sleep walkers, also known as the walk and rollers, as I call them, because they all have these big, kind of funny-looking vehicles covered with signs about civil rights for the homeless that sort of drive with them as they walk from San Diego to Sacramento, and they came through Santa Cruz, I guess, about a week ago. And now they're heading for San Francisco. They'll be in San Francisco tomorrow, hoping to hear from them on the air. We may get a call in from them sometime during this period of time. Enough said, Nancy McCready of Santa Barbara has been doing a fine job holding all that together. They're a small band of people, like 5 or 10, they fluctuate in there. And they are going through city after city, letting the people of California know that homeless people are there, they're not afraid to be visible, and they have real concerns that hopefully they can encourage homeless people in other municipalities and other places to sort of see this and join them. They're looking for people to join their walk. And it's a hot walk. We're in the middle of the summer. They're going to be walking to Sacramento, so grab your water bottle and head for San Francisco. If you want more information about this, you can contact Huff again, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And again, there should be a report coming in from the Walk and Rollers today on Free Radio. We're also hoping for an update from Paul Wagner. Paul is a housing activist who has been keeping a pretty close eye on the ADUs, accessory dwelling units. Those are the kind of makeshift units made by folks from garages and so forth, which constitute housing for 2,000 to 3,000 people, if not more, here in Santa Cruz, and are illegal. And there's been a move to legalize them, or at least legalize standards for building them in the future, and it didn't get as far as it some of us hoped. We wanted to get an update on that the last council meeting. That happened, and maybe we'll get some, actually, maybe it was a council meeting. It was the last council meeting. It was last Tuesday. And interesting stuff coming in from Olympia, Washington. Olympia, Washington is a city south of Seattle. I think it's the second largest city in Washington. I could be wrong about that. Maybe Spokane is, but Washington State, that is. And we had some folks down from Seattle from Tent City 3, the homeless-run encampment, somewhat similar to Camp Paradise and Camp Hope here, where they actually set up a camp illegally, solicited community support, and then kind of became legal as a consequence of all the positive publicity, as well as some legal fights that they had. They fought for the right to be in the backyards and parking lots of churches, and the city didn't like that. They wanted to get rid of them entirely. Again, an absolutely inhumane violation of basic human rights undertaken routinely by a major city, and that's what they do. And so you shouldn't be surprised when you see John Barisone and George Kovacevic, our city attorney staff and city attorneys, running in to criminalize people in Santa Cruz. It's all the rage. You know, I mean, this is something that just has to be fought. It has to be fought persistently. It has to be fought thoroughly. It has to be fought intelligently. But it has to be fought. And that's one of the reasons I'm having a meeting of this new group, Streetwise, today at 2 o'clock downtown. For those of you who came to the Friday downtown city council meeting on problems, downtown problems, I'm never quite sure what they're calling it these days. Don't have the exact name before me, but that's the group. It's the Riley Porter subcommittee. I call it to rubber stamp the merchant agenda, since that pretty much what was on the wall, in spite of extensive suggestions given by other members of the community 3 days before at the city council meeting, which we're going to hear shortly. Compliments of Becky Johnson, who made a long videotape of the entire council meeting and has queued it up and gotten it to me this morning. Thank you very much, Becky. Appreciate that. And I'm a little bit at a loss of what to do here. I'm going to kind of rely, to some extent, on the callers who call in. It really isn't terribly productive to listen to Emily Riley and Keith Sugar and Chris Crone talk about this committee, I don't think. And I say that because I find it, I mean, in a way, it's kind of eye-opening, because you see, they can put together a committee that will have a special meeting. It met in a shorter period of time than the 72-hour requirement. They met within 48 hours, or actually 56 hours, something like that, after the city council meeting. They had a meeting. The city council met Tuesday night. They came to a final decision Wednesday morning at 12:30 a.m. when no one was there. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate you doing that. And then they formed their little committee, and it met less than 72 hours later, which normally would be a violation of the Brown Act. You say, well, who cares about these technical Brown Act things? Well, the reason for the technicalities of the Brown Act is so the public can be told who's meeting where about what. Otherwise, merchants and city council people and developers and all these nasty behind-the-scenes interests get together and stamp their agenda on the city, and before we know it, there are fences up and down the avenue. We've criminalized sleeping in vehicles. There's big, huge signs up downtown that we don't want, although that probably isn't an appropriate exception. I think they actually sent that one to a committee for some public input, although God knows where they got that one from. Anyway, the reason for the Brown Act is to allow people some notice as to what's going on. And they, for example, noticed us to death around homeless issues and then did absolutely nothing about them. When they came into power in 98, the Crone Sugar Fitzmaurice group said they were going to do something about the sleeping ban and did absolutely nothing. Well, they reduced the fine. Thank you very much. And there was some pressure put on the police to issue less tickets, and that actually has continued to happen. But people's stuff is still being trashed up in the Poganip. People's vehicles are still being threatened, targeted, ticketed, and driven away out at natural bridges. The harassment downtown has stepped up markedly. We talked about the attack on Norman downtown on Monday, the man who was beaten for dropping breadcrumbs on the sidewalk. We have two new arrests for chalking on the sidewalk, Tim Rinker and Becky Johnson. Her first arrest, actually, that I know of, were arrested by police for writing on the sidewalk. Essentially, First Amendment activity signs like, this is the way to the city council subcommittee meeting, the right to chalk is a sacred right in terms of the right to express your opinion is an important right, and to do so with chalk is, you know, a traditional activity. They even sell sidewalk chalk downtown at Palace Art Stationery. We had kids kind of jumping up and down and hopscotching, and now we have a phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Becky Johnson.
Uh-oh. You're the chalk criminal, as I understand it.
I have been falsely accused.
Oh, no. Well, you know, you criminals always say that.
I'm innocent, man. Yeah, I didn't do anything wrong.
Oh, yeah? Well, come on, tell me another one. What's the deal here?
Oh, and Officer Wendy Bynes, she's the criminal because she refused to take my complaint against Julie Hendy for filing a false police report.
Hendy was the one who had you ticketed for chalking?
She was the so-called citizen complaint, and I say so-called because Julie Hendy is an employee of the Redevelopment Agency, an agency that I have been critical of in the past. But that's not what I called about.
I know, we're going to be playing actually some actual tape of that arrest, but
yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, I'll listen to that later. I'm more interested in talking about the editorial in the Santa Cruz Sentinel today.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And one line in particular stood out. I mean, there were several, but...
Well, let me interrupt you and say that this is a long editorial titled Memo on Downtown. It's in the Insight section of the paper. It's a standard Sentinel trash the homeless, trash the street people, merchants uber alles editorial, and it actually, you know, it dredges up all the worst fears we have in essentially linking the city council subcommittee to a series of proposals which I don't think were even proposed by Candy Jackson. It's they're talking about eliminating activities, littering, a malicious mischief or defacing of any public or private property. I guess that's you.
Let me.
Free food distribution.
That was the part that really stood out. Illegal activity that runs counter to state or municipal law, including the preparation and distribution of free food.
Mm-hmm.
And they say there are other areas of town in which food distribution is achieved in accordance with public health laws. And I suppose they're talking about...
St. Francis Soup Kitchen and the River Street Shelter, actually the Homeless Resource Center, probably.
Right. So this
Elm
is,
Street, maybe.
This is an attack on Potter's Hand, which does a feeding every Sunday afternoon.
Great feeding, yeah.
On Pacific Avenue.
Meat and vegan.
Food Not Bombs, which does three feedings a week.
Mm-hmm.
Of, by the way, it's all organic vegetarian food.
Plus, there are the random terrorists. I saw one last night who left bread at Cathcart and Pacific. There were a series of criminal terrorist bread loaves left there and still in their packages. So I thought, you know, I mean, apparently these terrorists can strike anywhere, and as Bush has warned us, I guess the FBI had its secret report that the July 4th terror, maybe they're just striking a little early this year, you know.
Yes, terror is all around us.
Yeah.
Also, the tone in this editorial, it underscores again and again. It's really talking to the city council and not to the public at large, and telling them that the police are our friends, the police are professional, the police enforce laws, police know the law, police are professional, and you need to believe the police. Don't make the mistake of not supporting the police in whatever they say or do.
Well, the Sentinel, I know, did a long story, and you read... We both read from that story, I guess, two stories are sort of contradictory about this beating of Norman for dropping breadcrumbs on the sidewalk at a Food Not Bombs event last Monday. And I guess he's still in jail, and he'll be coming to court, on Tuesday?
July 2nd, yeah.
On Tuesday at 8:15 for felony assault on an officer with a weapon, the weapon, of course, being the officer, I guess, the officer's weapon. I got quite a different take on that when I talked to a woman at Noah's Bagels yesterday.
What, a non-homeless person?
I was a merchant, actually, or a person working for a merchant who said she was really kind of... She was impressed at the forbearance of the man. She didn't hear him screaming things. She observed the whole thing from a fairly close distance. It happened right around the news racks right outside her Noah's Bagels.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite a story. Unfortunately, my tape recorder, defective equipment, tended to... It was giving me problems, so I didn't...
Oh, no, we have to rely on your memory. Oh, no.
And I can't remember who you are. But in any case, that was... So I think the thing about the Sentinel editorial, you know, it's like, as I was saying, playing the city council's discussions. They seem kind of, you know, in a way, it's misleading and pointless and time-wasting to spend a lot of time on it, although I guess you've got to know what they're doing, what they're saying, certainly to some extent, because I believe that what they say is, it's hard, you know, sometimes it's lies, it's true, sometimes it's misinformation, sometimes it's good intentions that don't go anywhere, mostly it's sort of crowd-pleasing fluff, I mean, it's sort of filler, And so, you know, in a way, what I want to do, if I think what I may do, is skip to the very end of the council meeting where there was a final decision at 12:30 in the morning, which few people, I think, were awake to see, about what was going to happen with the subcommittee. And then, of course, there's the subcommittee meeting itself, which similarly had the same problem. And I'll go on about this on the air when I can. But anyway, is there more you would like to say?
Just that I urge people to check out this editorial and realize that even though people have been served free food on Pacific Avenue with unmolested for the most part for over 10 years, that those days may be coming to an end and that we need to get out and defend the right of people to give away free food.
Well, I think it's that the whole assault on Monday was related to the free food distribution.
Mm-hmm.
It was a form of harassment of the folks at the free food, just as people sitting near the Potter's Hand were being harassed for sitting down within 10 feet of this essentially closed Cooper House, where there's no stores even in the vacant front areas.
First floor, yeah.
But still the hosts are running around harassing people. I think they may have gotten better about that. Yeah, go ahead.
If I might say something here.
I don't know about that.
Okay. You'll have to stop talking for me to do that.
I'll try.
What we're seeing is that the police come up around these free food, serving of free food, whether it's Food Not Bombs or the Potter's Hand or some other group, and start picking on and micromanaging and looking for anything that they might hassle the people who are there about, such as the feeding the birds with the breadcrumbs that Norman Friedberg is accused of doing.
Yeah, or sitting on the sidewalk, or
and I think that's
your business.
Yeah, or sitting on the edge of on the lip of a planter.
Mm-hmm. Or dropping a cigarette butt, perhaps.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then when they observe something that they believe is criminal, then they come down like a ton of bricks on the person, chewing them out, accusing their, you know, attacking their ethical and moral value, you know, chastising them the worst, oh, I shouldn't say Catholic reform school teacher, but it does remind me of somebody. And this usually causes that person to be offended and upset. And hopefully they can escalate this into a more major situation, which they were successful in doing with Norman Friedberg.
No, I don't agree with you. I don't think they're trying to escalate it. I think they're trying to discourage people from coming to these things, and they would prefer that everybody bow their heads and leave, or, you know, suddenly start behaving
like... But
start behaving like they're in reform school, as you said, or like they're in class. And you're right, if they don't, then you have a situation where it can escalate, and that's
and
the
then,
problem.
And then when it does, then they broadcast, look, see how these food feedings are causing all this crime
right.
to happen.
Right.
The police, you know, have to do this.
Right.
So
I
they
think
justify their own actions.
I know, and more important than that, this is just a standard process that the merchants and the police do. And also, it's interesting, it's around budget time where the police budget is coming up. Perhaps you'll have a report from on that soon, because I think that it's really important. We aren't getting that information out in this, you know, from the Sentinel.
I'm saying don't look for any major budget cuts in the police department at any time soon, despite what our budget woes in the city might be.
Right.
Those potholes are in the roads are just going to have to wait another few years. Sorry. We need more cops.
All righty. Well, thank you for calling. Anything else you want to say?
I may call back later if I feel so inclined.
Yeah, well, everyone has that option.
Yeah,
thank
but
you.
People should come to my hearing on Wednesday.
That's a date.
Yeah, Wednesday, 8:30, Department 1 at the Santa Cruz County Courthouse in front of Commissioner Irwin Joseph.
That's for your Chuck crime. We'll be talking about that.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, caller.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
And that was Becky Johnson, who was arrested yesterday for chalking on the sidewalk. And we're going to play a little bit about that, actually. She wasn't arrested yesterday. She was arrested Friday. And what happened on Friday was, as I mentioned, the city council had put together a two-person subcommittee, Riley and Porter, who essentially were looking into merchant concerns. And I find this, as I said, I was kind of getting into this before, it seems to me the city council is either moving to rubber stamp the merchants, which isn't necessarily going to happen, because in so doing they would antagonize and alienate some other parts of their constituency, though not a lot. They've moved pretty much to the right. I don't think they're concerned about civil rights for people downtown particularly, but there are some people who kind of look at them askance because they haven't done anything about rent control, they haven't done anything about community control police, they haven't done anything about homeless shelter in any meaningful way. They haven't done anything about the sleeping or camping bans or the downtown ordinances, you know, the preposterous sit 10 feet from a store, get a ticket, sit in the lip of a planter, disturb nothing but still sit there, get a ticket, play in front of a street cafe without the permission of the cafe owner on the public sidewalk, get a ticket or get driven away, ask for a dime after dark, get driven away or get a ticket, and do it twice up to 6 months in jail. That's the kind of shit, frankly, that we got from Kennedy and Rotkin in 1994, and Cynthia Matthews, all of whom are either on the council or running again this year. And we had hoped that Fitzmaurice Cronin Sugar, and particularly Porter, who made promises to the Green Party that were very explicit, particularly around the sleeping ban, would deal with. And, of course, none of them have. It hasn't even showed up on the agenda. But let the merchants snap their fingers, and they're going into a special subcommittee, almost an emergency subcommittee mode. And as I said, I'm not entirely persuaded that they're going to rubber stamp what the merchants do. I think they want to play the merchants, just like they want to play the rest of us. I don't think they're prepared to really declare open war downtown with new ordinances, because they don't need to, because the police are already enforcing the ordinances that are producing essentially a state of war downtown between poor people, homeless people, and street musicians and all these folks who are just simply trying to do what they've always done, which has to do with survive, try to make a life down there, as we all do. It's a community center. And the merchants do what they've always done, which is try to monopolize the scene, drive people away that they don't like, declare there's a major crisis, and privatize things to death, which, unfortunately, is what they did with Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe in front of New Leaf Market. And I have a little bit of an update on that coming up, too. What the community has to do is fight back. And I had initially thought, I'd talk to Candy Jackson, let's all get together and meet about it. You know, maybe we can have some real meetings. The city council isn't really going to help you with this. Candy didn't want to do that. You know, she wanted to trust the city council. I tried to talk to her again about it. Still couldn't get her to agree to it. I'm still open if people want to meet. But I'm realizing that meeting doesn't mean anything unless you have some power. And the only way we can get power is if we start organizing. And that's what I'm doing with this group, Streetwise. If folks want to join us, we'll see if they do. It's meeting today at 2 o'clock downtown. 2 o'clock in front of the Cinema 9 area, in front of O'Neill Surf Shop. It's actually that large, broad sidewalk across from the Cinema 9. And Streetwise is a group that is trying to, well, first of all, articulate what's really happening so that there's a record kept of every single instance of harassment that happens downtown. So the lies that the Sentinel and the misinformation that some merchants communicate and believe, some of them naively and innocently, and because I saw a lot of, frankly, good people who are merchants at these meetings, but the problem is they have their own perspective. They have their own beliefs. They have their own sense of what's going on down there, and unless we have something to counter that, some reality, give them a reality check, not just in terms of this is what's really happening, which is important, but also, these are the people who are going to just say no to this bullshit. Unless we do that, they will proceed to push through their agenda, either explicitly through the city council or implicitly through what the police do every day without even going to the city council. And there will be more violent incidents downtown, prompted by police repression. Because that's what it's about. Police repression prompts violent incidents. And if people really want to stop that, they want to see this change, we have to deal with the problem, which has to do with unjust laws. It has to deal with groups of people not communicating and talking to each other, but using the police. And I'm talking about the merchants, because people on the streets can't use the police. They have to avoid the police. We have a call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
How's it going, Robert?
Good. Who's this?
It's Skidmark Bob.
Hey, Skidmark.
Just waking up, getting some coffee.
I've been harassing you with phone calls about Cop Watch, I know, and you've told me you haven't been able to find that. I haven't either.
I was working that night.
I want to put out a call to anybody who was at that Loudoun Nelson Center meeting at 6:30 on Thursday. If you were a part of that Cop Watch group, please give a call to the show. Let us know how things are going.
I found a possible solution that could possibly work.
Tell me.
We could invite Bum Fights to come down here to hire homeless people at $5 to, let's see, have them go through windows, set them on fire, and videotape them. And that'll keep them employed.
This is, you know, this is a revolutionary, actually not revolutionary, it's rather business smart. We've heard of street smart. Well, this is business smart idea. I know you've called up and mentioned this incredible deal about, who's this guy?
His producer's called Ty Beeson.
Uh-huh.
And basically what he's done, he started doing it when he was in high school as a high school project. And I've heard of videos done where kids try to pretend they're, you know, wrestlers and beat each other up and stuff. But what these people do is they go around, they pay homeless people to either fight with one another, or some, they say it's staged sometimes, but when you set a homeless person's hair on fire, like what I saw in some of the videos, that's not staged. And the guy didn't even know what was going on. He was drunk, and then, you know, he could make some fast money, and so they paid him like $5, $10, maybe $20 to set this guy's head on fire. They duct tape people. It's sick. It's really, really sick.
Now, wait a minute. This sounds like a sort of an interesting approach. I mean, what you're doing is you're kind of sending a message to all the hippies and deadheads and homeless folks that maybe they should, you know, take their business somewhere else.
Well, they call it, Shock TV?
Shock TV. Well, doesn't the mall need this kind of, you know, purification, this kind of cleansing? I mean, don't we want law and order in our town? I mean, there are some unusual approaches to getting this. Isn't this a bum fights maybe the way? Maybe we should invite this guy to come to town and do some stuff here. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I think that's quite an idea. Maybe we will start a fund to ask, what's his name?
Ty Beeson.
Ty Beeson to, grab a plane or hop a freight or, you know, jump on a skunk and head this way, you know?
Well, the sick thing is that he's becoming a millionaire over this, selling these videotapes.
Well, maybe he could donate a certain amount of money so we could have a sort of a special arena where merchants could watch homeless people sort of throw mud at each other.
Oh, yeah, just like the old Roman days, right?
Well,
lions or cops beating.
Well, it would be out of town, so it wouldn't really be downtown. We get the people away from the downtown. There'd be kind of, you know, we provide free kinds of, you know, refreshments.
Uh-huh.
And it would be a way, sort of like movies at the Del Mar, but we wouldn't have the undesirable types there.
It would be more realistic.
Yeah, and it would also be more local. We'd have our own local people employed, as you point out, doing this.
Yeah, there
Bum
you go.
Bumfights. Really,
Bumfights.com is a website if you want to get sickened. They also have pornography on the website, too.
Mm. Well, we got, you know, we're trying to stamp out pornography downtown with the bare breast thing, but maybe we could have a sort of a pasty in where everybody walks around with pasties on. What do you think? Would that be an idea?
Sure.
I mean, I think, or actually, I've suggested a nude smoke-in, but that's considered a little too
nude
radical.
Smoke-in.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hot weather. I mean, who wants to wear all these clothes anyway?
Right.
I mean, some of us may be a little chunky, but we have, you know, we have this size ordinance, because you can't really discriminate by appearance. You know, that's the Coonerty, you know, appearance law. So
you've got to make room and not, you know, and wear out the benches downtown. Oh, there are no benches downtown. Never mind.
Well, now, wait a minute. According to the Parks and Rec Department, in a letter forwarded to me by Christopher Crone from the, I guess, assistant to the assistant of the Parks and Rec, all the benches that have been removed were simply returned and placed somewhere else.
Oh, that's right.
That's what he says.
They're being refinished, and they're putting new strips of wood on them, and it takes a while to import them from wherever they're importing them.
They have just been moved around to better locations. So this is, now, that's what this thing says.
The warehouse or something?
Well, not according to this man, who says that it is actually all the benches are being put back in different spots. Now, I myself, I guess, have not really been keeping close track, because I noticed benches disappearing.
Robert.
I've seen a few come back in different areas, but not... Brian Koepke counts more than half the benches gone from the downtown area. Now, Brian is the head of Food Not Bombs.
Well, they put them in Santa Cruz, Italy, or something like that.
Well, maybe they went to the wrong city. There's a Santa Cruz in Mexico, probably
in Mexico,
a number of them.
That's probably where they sent them, you know.
Well, you know, I
trying to help out the Mexicans, you know, give them some
sister city.
There, some, send them some benches.
Well, maybe they sent them up to the Bumbuster area, or what they call bum fights, to sort of provide benches so people could watch.
What was interesting is they had a big story about this on CBS. They actually covered it on a couple of different broadcasts about this bum fight thing. And I thought it was interesting. I interviewed the guy, and he's like, well, we're helping the homeless. You know, we're giving them money. Of course, we're abusing them and beating them up and taping it and having fun while we're doing it. But he really seriously thinks he's helping the homeless. And they tried to donate money to the, God, what is it? National Coalition of Homelessness, I think.
It's like sort of Rockefeller making money off of war and then giving peace prizes.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
exactly.
Or Kissinger getting the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's an example of the kind of token efforts that are made to cover the real impact of what these folks do.
Right.
But you know, I wanted to ask you, Bob, since you were around in 94, were you not, when the Rodkin Kennedy downtown ordinance was passed and there?
Yeah.
And I guess you were part of the World Peace Vigil which was the main reason, one of the main reasons for the downtown ordinance is because
the second version, actually.
You were there for Valentine's Day 94 when in front of, I guess,
Juan Dave and
Robert Flory.
Robert Flory.
Red Top Robert. Yeah, you were across from, I guess, what is now the Cooper House area.
In front of Cinema 9.
In front of Cinema 9 when it was sort of a hole in the ground and a local cafe, I guess, is all it was. And you you saw 3 months later how suddenly, the merchants wanted to ram through a bunch of ordinances. I called them the Coonerty-Kennedy Ordinance because that's Kennedy was mayor and Coonerty was the mayor pushing it through. The way it got stopped was, I think a lot of people didn't get stopped. We got the downtown ordinances, but they were going to be worse. There were going to be permits. There was going to be illegal to give a flyer away to people. There was going to be a youth curfew, which they pushed years later, but not at that time.
Just a Huff flyer will be illegal.
Right? Well, Huff flyers are already questionable, you know. But I think we stopped that by essentially bringing in people from other cities by making quite a ruckus about it. And I would like to talk to merchants about stuff, and I don't mind getting together with them in groups. And frankly, they seem nice enough people when you get down and talk to them one-on-one. But you can't really get anywhere unless you have numbers of people who are willing to indicate that they're not prepared to tolerate laws that take away civil rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that depends on the situation, I think. Like what you were mentioning about the ordinances that happened downtown, we went to a series of city council meetings. You know, like what they're doing now, they're just starting to talk about it, and then they decided they're going to do it, and then they went through the three stages of the city council meeting, and we filled up the chambers every time, and they still end up passing them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, what was it, the 15th of May?
May 11th.
No, the first week, May 5th, I think it was. It was a week before May 11th.
Right, the police came and busted people for...
Busted 15 local Funot bombers for sitting down and eating soup.
Mm-hmm.
On where
Cathcart and Pacific.
Yeah, where the town center is now.
Mm-hmm.
And that went through a series of changes too. They put up the fence, they put up the little curb, they put up the fence, and they put the slats in the fence, and people took the slats out.
They put flowers along the side.
Oh yeah, oh my God, I remember that. And then someone dumped fish oil all over that area to try to drive people away. And it just went on and on. And then that demonstration happened. Basically, the first week was just local folks, but then the Bay Area caught wind of it, and then all the Berkeley folks, San Francisco folks, came down for a huge broad protest that actually was, I think it was pretty good, a good protest.
I think it was very successful. This was the May 11th protest, and this is the one where police came and arrested about 40 people, and then they realized more people they're arresting them for sitting down. That's all they were doing. They were sitting down eating food, and one person would get arrested, another person would sit down. Person after person after person. The court threw out all the arrests. The law was thrown out, although Kennedy passed another law which was similar and that's currently in force.
Well, the supposedly the reason why they had to change the law is because it was too hard to enforce. Because first of all, I noticed Officer Goodwin and Perry would walk around and they'd talk to the people and tell them, look, you're going to get a ticket for sitting down, you're going to get a ticket for sitting down, you're going to get a ticket for sitting down. They went around in a circle, and then I guess they couldn't remember who they talked to, so then they started ticketing people and taking them away, and then they stuck them in the van, and then they take them to the jail parking lot. They wouldn't even go to the jail. They'd take them to the jail parking lot and sign them out. They'd come back to the protest and get arrested again. I mean, a couple of people got arrested like two or three times that day.
And a couple of people made money off this. I didn't know this until about 2 weeks ago when I examined the records, that people won financial settlements from the city for false arrests around this
stuff.
That was the coalition.
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, I almost saw this process begin on Friday when police began arresting people for chalking.
Oh,
it was so outrageous. We saw little kids chalking on the sidewalk in response to, you know, this. And there's going to be chalk down there at the table today for those who wish to, you know, well, it says sidewalk chalk. It's sold at the Palace Art Stationery.
Yeah, but it could have anthrax in it.
It could have anthrax. That's true.
Threat.
I mean, I think if you wear gloves and have a gas mask, you're going to be okay. So Skidmark, what do you think? Are we going to have another round? I mean, my problem is not just that they're proposing bad laws. My problem is that they're enforcing bad laws now, going after people for dropping breadcrumbs, sitting on planters,
right,
dropping a cigarette butt, and they're doing this crap about running people away, taking out benches.
Right.
This has got to stop. And
this happens every summertime, unfortunately.
Yep.
They could be making it better by trying to talk to people and try to make their policies a little more friendly during the wintertime and springtime and all that. But essentially, they don't do anything until the tourists start coming to town. And then all of a sudden, it's a big surprise. It's always a big surprise. And then, as I've heard Butchie Baker say, they have to come out and sting the cattle. That's a quote I've heard him say. Actually,
sting the cattle. When did
it's
he
called
say?
Sting the cattle, boys. I heard him on the scanner one time saying
that. It's strange. These guys, they can be so congenial when you talk to them personally. I mean, Baker and I have all these, old boy conversations at city council. And, then I hear of him doing something downtown, and there's a series of incidents where he goes after people, ranging from bicyclist Jen Curry to older folks with signs, for panhandling.
He gave me a ticket for having stolen property, and that happened to be a milk crate on the back of my bike.
All over town, they're used for all kinds of things.
Well, I did find out if it does say Reg Cal,
mm-hmm,
or whatever on the, then it's technically stolen property in your possession. So all you people out there got stolen property in your house, holding up your TV.
It may be time to do some raids. I mean, there are terrorists everywhere.
Actually, they wanted to put a clause in my probation to say that they could come in and search my house for illegal.
Stolen milk crates,
which I have hidden.
Well, I'm glad you. Well, I think.
Place.
All right. Well, we can start the milk crate distribution later tonight.
He also ticketed me one night. I was riding my bike, and it wasn't even dark yet. It was just starting to get dark, and I saw him out of the corner of my eye behind me, looking at me. And then later on that night, it was darker, and I was out riding around, and then all of a sudden, I was like, all these cops are following me in their cars and stuff, and then all of a sudden all these cops converge on me like I'm some kind of, the Unabomber or something, and I find out it's because of my bike light. So I had to sit over in front of Subway for about a half an hour until Butchie Baker got done with his donut break to come over to write me a ticket. That was interesting.
Well,
that was solid harassment. That was on his part. That was back in the days when I was doing Cop Watch.
None of this is really dealt with, and none of this has become the basis for any kind of more meaningful guidelines that might rein in the police on this or provide an alternate system, like up in Eugene. If there's a sleeping ticket, they send out a social worker to talk to the person, try to find a place for them to go. Instead, here, it's just the cops harass you, or they ticket you, or even they come in and just chop up your stuff. I mean, I've got.
Well, what happened to our social worker we had on the mall? Didn't we have one?
We had Dennis Johnston, and then he disappeared. And there's some other person. I think there may or may not be a mental health worker. I don't know if they
decide if the person was 50-on-50 or not on the
instead,
rather than the cop deciding that, I guess.
Right. Well, the cops always have the right to make those decisions too.
Right.
But the fact is that instead of getting budgeting for that kind of stuff, what you've got is budgeting for, continued police at the same levels while other things are being cut. Now, I'm gonna try to play a message from Martine Bernal, who is a city manager who called me back on this issue on Friday, kind of summarizing what the police budget results were, and I may try to put that on later in the show.
Oh, right, the budget.
Might be interesting, because the budget is coming up again at the next city council meeting for the final vote, and that, of course, is something that we should all be, if they don't have the money, they can't get out there and do as much stuff, and of course, they are going to have the money, thanks to our city council, and it's really unfortunate, and I think we have to organize ourselves. I've always said this, and I think that to bring to the community, not the city council, but the community, I mean, bring it to the council too, but bring up a series of voluntary guidelines for skateboarders, for hacky sackers, for panhandlers, and for street performers and vendors.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we already got street performers, but street vendors, and just have people agree to abide by these things, and then start doing it. And if they go after people anyway, well, then they go after people anyway, but we appeal to the broader community. We resist this kind of stuff. That's
Didn't
all.
Didn't Tom Noddy already do something along those lines? But still, a lot of people don't know about it.
Well, right? Tom Noddy has the Street Performers Guidelines, which he's actually going to be calling in later. We hope, or we're going to try to reach him.
Oh, the Bubble Man. All right.
The Bubble Man, who's who's heading for Zurich later in the year, and he actually has been kind of trying to involve himself. He was at this big meeting. I don't know if you probably didn't make it on Friday to the meeting of the city council. There's also a meeting on Monday for those who are interested. 6 o'clock. At 705 Front Street, which is the corner of Front and Cooper Streets. It's the McPherson Art Museum, and it's going to be another session of the Riley Porter, How Can We Help These Merchants? But if enough people show up, they will be in a somewhat difficult position as far as the record goes, but, that's always good to do. So thank you, Bob, for calling in.
Yeah, just remember, it's summertime, and it's time to sting the cattle, as Sergeant Baker would
Do that. Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
So now's your chance. Phone lines are open at 427-3772 if you want to get in here on this. I think what I'm going to go to, barring another phone call, I'm going to go directly to some of the tapes I made on Friday. We're going to begin with a tape that was made outside the meeting of the downtown committee by the city council. It was a pretty packed room, and I think eventually you're going to hear some people talking at that meeting. And then we'll go to the arrests that happened for chalking on the sidewalk. Again, to set the scene for you, we had a table to organize folks around Streetwise. Didn't get too many people showing up, but people were very sympathetic, those who did. A number of people started chalking on the sidewalk, and you're going to hear the tape begin at that point after this phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert.
Hey there, Tom.
I'm calling actually for a couple of reasons, but one of them is that I listen religiously to the station and also to your show, and it seems to me that the one thing that seems to be lacking is a kind of an understanding of strategy and tactics.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, in all of the expedients that I hear mentioned, there's nothing where they have to listen because they're going to get something if they're going to get the carrot and the stick, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it seems to me that you have to find a way for what this is about people who think that homelessness and, the problems thereto associated are going to cost them money.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is always, it seems to me that the strategic problem is to show people that it will lose them more money to behave the way they're continuing to behave,
mm-hmm,
than to behave any other way. And that what needs to be done, and I wish I could say I had some brilliant ideas about this, but what needs to be done is in some way to show, because the only thing, if you want to stop anything in this country, and I'm sure you know this, everyone knows it on a certain level, if you want to stop anything that's going on in this country, you have to find out who's making the money and stop the flow of the money, and you've solved your problem. You don't have to talk about law. You don't have to talk about ethics. You don't have to talk about humanity.
Well, Tom, that's actually part of what this organizing is about. Because if we get people who are prepared to start engaging in demonstrations downtown, and we make it clear to the media and the tourists that that's what's going on, in fact, we even encourage boycotts. It will, at least either have a real or a potential economic effect on the downtown, which may produce what you suggest.
Yeah, well, the clearer one is, that sounds wonderful. I mean, boycotts are certainly, there's a wonderful book, Robert, do you happen to know this, the Reveille for Radicals?
Saul Alinsky, yeah. I haven't read it recently, but I've seen it.
Neither have I. I have a memory of it, but I know that it's very, it's very effective because he goes into a place and finds out the way to make it, basically, to make it cost you if you continue to oppose this action that I believe is necessary or desirable or whatever.
Right. The main problem we have is we don't have the people to do it right now. We have people who are divided and working on separate things, as of course is always going to be the case. And I'm going to be showing up at 2 o'clock downtown at this table at Cooper and Pacific. Invite people to come on down. And again, we also have a meeting of the Homeless Issues Working Group where people could conceivably come at 5:30 tonight. That's going to be at 1135 North Brancaforte. And then again, Encampments United meets at 6. And of course, then there's the downtown committee meeting itself tomorrow. I should say Monday at 6 o'clock. On Monday at the at Front and Cooper Street at the McPherson Museum. So there are a number of places where people can meet. But before we even, I mean, there are all kinds of strategies. The problem is we don't have anybody to do them.
Of course that's definitely a problem. But you have to you work with what I mean. It's not the lack of meetings that I'm talking about, because you've been, as far as I know, I've been in town nearly 10 years, and there've been meetings
and meeting
all
to
along,
death, yeah.
But I'm just wondering if the focus is on money, mm-hmm. always on money. That's what you're working against, is that people think you're losing them money.
I got you, Tom. Anything else you want to add to this?
Well, I want to add something on a completely different.
And now for something completely different. Go ahead.
What?
Go ahead.
And it's ironic that I should be talking to you, because you're the one person that always, your show is wide open to people calling in. And that is, I love what the station is becoming and has become, but there's very little when you do an interview with someone. There's and I realize some of them are taped and some of them, but some of them are not taped, as far as I can make out. And even people who say, I think of John Malcolm in a recent thing where he says that he's going to open the phones to comments from the outside. And he never does. And in the course of the interview, of course, that's been done several times, and now it's on tape. And of course, he can't. But he doesn't in the original.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what I'm suggesting to the station, to the programmers as a whole, is just to make the station a little bit more sort of open mic,
accessible,
open for people to call in on mm-hmm. on whatever the subject happens to be,
mm.
not just on this in this area where you're shining light.
Mm-hmm. Well.
So I don't know exactly where to make that suggestion.
You're making it here, and you also, of course, could call the voicemail at 427-4523.
4523.
It's a voicemail, and suggest that at the next meeting that folks consider just a general sort of APB to broadcasters that if the collective wants to support that there be more time for public comment, since we don't have much time at all through the city council and through other radio stations. So I think that's a reasonable suggestion. It depends on what people want to do, of course.
Of course.
And, of course, there's always a chance of starting your own station there, Tom. You could always do that.
Again. I have my own station?
Yes.
No, I don't.
No, you should get your own station.
Get my own station.
I mean, I've been suggesting for years that students up on campus and other groups form alternate stations, because this is a town of 55,000. It needs more than one free radio station. So.
Of course it does. Yeah.
It's not that
I'm
expensive.
Right? I'm an old man, Robert.
You're an old geezer like me.
I support Freak Radio, and that's going to be about it, I think.
Well, listen, thank you for calling in, Tom. Anything else?
Bye-bye.
And that was Tom, who himself was doing free radio before any of us even thought of it, actually, and was arrested for it in Venice. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norse. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. It's 11 o'clock, and I promised, actually, to play some tapes on the arrest. Now, I'm going to be a little late as usual, but what I will start with is some of the precursor to the arrest, where we were at. This is for the arrest for chalking, chalk crime, as I call it, down Pacific Avenue on Friday. And as you know, for those of you who are locals, and that probably includes most of my audience, Pacific Avenue is a street that runs through downtown Santa Cruz, has broad sidewalks, and is a kind of a varied center. The attempts of the police department, the redevelopment agency, and the merchants to sanitize it have had significant mutilating effects on the street. It used to be a garden mall with brick planters before the earthquake, and the earthquake gave the police and Marty Wormhout and the entire Vision Santa Cruz gang the chance to sanitize the street, tear out all the trees, make it a little bit more like most other Main Street USAs, but there's still a Santa Cruz quality to it, and more important, there's a Santa Cruz community supporting it. Chalking on the sidewalk is a traditional activity that's been used by political protesters by artists, by individuals who want to do hopscotch, and we had a hopscotch game matrix laid out on the street yesterday, or I should say on Friday, at the, where I'm going to be again today, at Cooper and Pacific, right across from the Cinema 9 in front of O'Neill's Surf Shop. So you're going to hear some tape from that that whole scene. We were directing people to go to the city's meeting on downtown problems, which, of course, the real downtown problems, there are many of them, I'm sure, but certainly from my perspective, the downtown problems has to do with police and host harassment downtown, onerous laws, and just a community-unfriendly attitude by the merchant and police overseers of the downtown, and the city council's complete abdication of responsibility, or it's signing on to their agenda. Let's hear some of that.
June 28th, is it? Yeah. And we're in front of the Cinema 9 with
Jeff
and
Tim.
And someone has been chalking the sidewalk in a shocking fashion. I don't know what to say. There's a meeting of the City Council subcommittee happening around the corner, and I'm out here talking about the issues on the street. Your name, sir, is?
The same thing. Will Pena.
Will, you're out here in the beautiful Santa Cruz sunshine from San Rafael.
Well, I actually live in Santa Cruz, but my sister was visiting from San Rafael, and she told me that they have an Italian, they call it street painting, but it's actually done with chalks, and this whole block was just turned over to people and chalk like this, and there were beautiful things, and it was part of a street fair. And so I told her, well, not in Santa Cruz, you know how paradoxical we are, some people just got busted for doing the same thing that up in your fair city they got prizes to for.
Paradoxical and paranoid both.
And you got it.
Well, here I am.
And now we're inside in the meeting, about halfway through the meeting of the downtown committee. And you'll be hearing some of that.
Situation with the cars could perhaps be eradicated too. We have the pedestrian mall. I think that's a big problem with the repping. The people up and down the mall, they're like cruising.
Thank you. Alex Brown?
Some of it is pretty hard to hear, but it actually gets better, so hang with it. Yeah, rather than waste your time with this, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to try to spin ahead to the more audible portions of this tape. And while we're doing it, we're going to hear from directly from the video the original city council discussions on this last Tuesday when it came onto the agenda. And unfortunately, you're going to hear some blather from Sugar Crone and the usual talkaholics there who don't want to give us any more than 2 minutes but don't mind wasting all our time for great periods of time. Let's hear some of that.
I'm moving. That's so bad.
So they do it in Luchter.
Item number 27, this is a recommendation that the city council create a special temporary council committee comprised of three council members to be determined at this meeting and charged with developing recommendations for action to address social behavior and criminal issues in downtown and return to the city council with initial recommendations by July 9th. 2002, and this was brought forward by Vice Mayor Riley, Councilmember Porter, Councilmember Sugar. I'm going to turn it over to one of those folks.
Take it, Chief.
Which are our prints?
Yeah, thank you, Chris. The City Council in recent weeks has been deluged with complaints about behavioral issues downtown, specifically on Pacific Avenue. both from merchants, from people who shop downtown, and people who really just like to be downtown and enjoy the ambiance of the avenue. Unfortunately, in the perception of many, that ambiance has taken a turn for the worse, and there are an ever-increasing, or at least perceived to be an ever-increasing number of incidences involving untoward behavior. These incidences range from rude or harassing remarks that we've discussed up here on the dais before to several violent, very violent crimes that have occurred just within the past month. It involves everything from drug use to relieving people, relieving themselves in public, and really spans a very broad spectrum of behavioral issues. The problem with that, obviously, is that the mall, and I still stubbornly call it the mall is there for everyone. However, the behavior of some is making it so that the mall is not for everyone. That the concern here, and that the concern that the council has been hearing, is that people displaying these behavioral issues have, in a sense, appropriated the mall for themselves. And to the extent that that's going on, obviously, it's unacceptable. The mall is there for everyone to enjoy. It is not there for people to enjoy at the expense of others. The council, faced with these issues, needs to, I believe, identify exactly what the issues are, specifically. And that sort of issue identification, I think, is a very critical part of what we're here to do. We embark on a task that has been undertaken before in response to an issue that has crept up many, many times before. We've got clippings in our agenda packet from the early 70s, and if you were to read one of the Sentinel articles describing problems on the mall from 1974, if you didn't know the date, you would assume that it was from today. So this is an issue that this community and this council has been grappling with for well on 30 years. I think that in approaching this issue, this topic, we need to understand that we are in a different environment today, that things change, that people change, that expectations and norms change. And as we go about trying to identify precisely what the issues are that we need to deal with, we've got to keep those realities in mind. We don't want to reinvent the wheel. We don't want to go where other councils have been before, because quite frankly, despite all the good efforts of previous councils and of this community, so many of the same problems still obtain downtown. What the situation calls for is some kind of a mechanism to develop new and innovative ideas of dealing with these problems. It is my feeling that a real approach, a real problem-solving approach, I should say, to this dilemma involves trying strategies and methods that have not been tried before. Because everything that we've tried before has led us to today. Now, I will add this very important caveat. This council has attempted to impose ordinances in the past, and it's, you know, we really can't sit up here and say that those ordinances haven't worked, because there has been a real problem in enforcement. And so it could be that one of the things because this council needs to assess is whether or not the laws that we have on the books already can be enforced in a more effective way, in a way that opens up Pacific Avenue to use by more people. So what, and I'll just say one more thing before I'll say what our recommendation is, and that is this is also a town that is famous the world over for the zeal with which it guards its civil liberties. And we have to be very careful, be very concerned that what we do in this regard is sensitive to that and does not run roughshod over anyone's civil liberties. There is a lot of imagination and creativity both in the staff, in the community, and on this council. And I'm optimistic that together we can find ways of dealing with this situation that don't involve compromising anyone's civil liberties. And I'm certain that there's no one on this dais that would support any measure to control behavior downtown, which did constitute an assault on civil liberties. So what are the answers? I don't know. But what we propose to do here this afternoon is to create a council subcommittee to work with all the stakeholders involved in our downtown to develop a way or to develop strategies of dealing with these so-called behavioral issues. One of the main tasks will be to identify what those issues are. There is certainly an increase in the perception that there are problems. Personally, I'd like to see some quantification of that. I don't want to act purely on anecdotal evidence. I'm enough of an empiricist to want to see the data that shows that, in fact, there is an upsurge of inappropriate activity downtown. That's what this committee is going to be set up to do. This committee will also be set up to work with the stakeholders to devise methods of dealing with the issues it identifies. Are those ordinances? Is it social work? Is it more community policing? I don't know. A lot of it is going to be what issues are identified, what this committee and the stakeholders come up with, and what money the city has to dedicate to the problem. But whether real or imagined, this is an issue that has once again made itself felt in this community. And so it behooves the council, I think, to take an aggressive approach and do what we can to address the community's concerns. As Chris said, I'm introducing this with Ed and Emily, and so I don't know if either of them want to say anything.
Okay, that is the, I've got to say, somewhat long-winded Keith Sugar, the man who we had hoped would actually do something about the existing downtown ordinances, who might be talking about police harassment, who might have done something about the sleeping ban, who might have done something about rent control. But instead, he's fronting for the merchants again, it sounds like, although I suppose you might say he's trying to do a soft shoe job where, he's diverting it to a committee where nothing's going to happen, or diverting it to a time at night when it's too late to do anything. That's what later happened. They delayed discussion on this for 7 hours or 6 hours, and then both he and Crone said, we don't want to talk about it because it's too late, the public isn't here, et cetera, et cetera. And while this is supposed to be, I suppose, a smart parliamentary tactic, I think it's dumb in terms of community trust for people. And I think, you know, here's a man who can't return a phone call in 3 years to homeless activists. Me and other people. But on the line, actually, apropos of that, we have Bernard Klistner, who has been on the phone with Mayor Chris Crone. Hi, Bernard.
Hi. I just wanted to let any of the audience or our brothers and sisters out there know, you know, that I just left probably a five-minute message to Christopher Crone. And I'm going to urge people to leave similar messages and confront him in person. And I warned him that that might be happening. And this is what I have to say. It's my understanding that yesterday, you know, when Barbara Lee came to town, that Christopher Crone introduced her to the audience. He also congratulated her for voting against the bombing, you know, of Afghanistan. And he just went on and on. And so I challenge Christopher on a similar parallel. Why not take a courageous step against the sleeping ban? You know, he's promised us that. So he needs to be doing that, and we should be throwing that at him. He's given us the juice, and we should go out after it now. There's no need for him, you know, to be keep ducking this one. So,
well, you know, Bernard, he has kept ducking not only the sleeping ban, but he didn't introduce a resolution to deal with the bombing here in Santa Cruz and talk about, you know, do what Berkeley did. He instead sat there while Fitzmaurice played his little public forum last September and declared, oh, it's much too divisive. He didn't stand up and say, we need to stop the bombing. So, I don't know, you're trying to get a wet linguine to, you know, to get stiff in the sun, and I don't think that's going to happen, but, you know, I commend you for trying. I mean, I wasn't at this meeting with Lee, but I find it such blatant hypocrisy to be fetting Lee but be refusing to bring it up yourself in city council. You know, I mean, he might have been voted down, but at least Lee was voted down, but she had the courage to bring it up. He hasn't had that courage.
That's, well, that, you know, it's kind of like a double-edged sword, you know, that when somebody, you know, congratulates somebody else and they're doing the opposite, that energizes me to go after that person. And I'm just wondering if other people are thinking the same way, and mm-hmm. if they are, I'd like to get some feedback, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. I don't know, you know, it's like I say, you know, it's one political strategy, and it doesn't mean that, you know, that there isn't other ones that are just as valid. It's just that this guy, I think, is putting himself more out there for as a target, and I think that we need to go after him when he does that.
Right. Well, I actually, he showed up on Friday at this meeting for the downtown people, and I kind of encouraged him to come over and talk to the people at the Streetwise table as he walked past the Streetwise table en route to the meeting, and of course he ducked. He wouldn't do that. He doesn't like being in forums where there's actually a fair amount of time for the other side. He, you know, he's happy in circumstances where he can force you to talk for only 2 minutes and then threaten to arrest you if you talk longer. He's happy in forums where he can talk to Barbara Lee in a protected environment where the police will arrest people if they're interruptive or hostile or angry or try to bring up real issues. So, you know, I always think it's good to raise issues, but I think that a lot of energy has been perhaps wasted going to the city council and trying to get his attention and Sugar's attention and Fitzmaurice's attention and then previously Byer's attention, but now Porter and Riley, because, you know, their attention will follow what the community is doing. And if you get together an encampment that's setting up shop on City Hall, they'll definitely start paying attention. You won't even have to talk to them. They'll come talk to you. So, I mean, I'm with you. When I see Crone downtown, I call him up. What about the sleeping ban, Chris? Are you ever going to introduce a resolution to stop the bombing and stop the, you know, the Bush's war? Are you going to do anything of that sort? And, of course, I get, I've got to go. You know.
But now, Robert, you'll be able to say to him, well, you know, what about you were congratulating Barbara Lee for her heroic stand? You have more juice. That's my only point.
I understand. Okay, well, that's good. And I think the more public criticism of these officials, the better. But even more important than that is us forming the kinds of links and mutual support and start taking the actions that are real actions in the community. And that's one of the reasons I sort of wanted to reach out to the merchants, and I'm going to talk more about that as soon as...
I think you're right, and I think a few of those merchants, at least a minority of them, can be, you know, won over to our base.
Thank you, Bernard. And I guess good luck. You're off to the Carson City team.
Yeah, I'm going to go off there for a little while.
You want to give a brief update on them? I know we talked about them on the air.
I think that I know very, very little about that to be giving updates.
All right, well, maybe we'll get a call from somebody.
Maybe
there.
John might have a little more
possibly
info on that.
Hey.
Thank you, Robert. And I urge people to go after Crone, you know. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Crone's number, for those who want to call him now, is 420-5023, 420-5023. It's not his home phone. It's his private city council line. Actually, it should be public. It is his personal line as a city council member slash mayor. So you can give him a call there and talk to him if you'd like and do what Bernard says. Here's another incoming call. Looks like that caller didn't want to be on the air. Caller, you can, if you want to talk to me off air, wait till we begin the tape again. We're going to do that shortly. Going to resume the tape from the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of Tuesday, June 28th, which brought this merchant petition from Candy Jackson forward, asking that there be, at least discussion, but it was phrased in terms of laws, actually, legal changes for no hacky sackers, no skateboarders, no panhandlers in line, no street vendors, no groups of more than six gathering for more than an hour, no bare breasts, and of course ignoring the reality that we really want are an end to the downtown ordinances and a set of codes that will deal with this like the street performers guidelines. And this is only going to be obtained when people, first of all, get together and demand them. And secondly, we're going to need people out there in the audience, if you're a skateboarder, if you're a hacky sacker, if you're a person who spare changes on the street, to sit down and work out these guidelines. I'm not able to do it myself. I'm willing to try to help, but I'm certainly not going to try to do it all by my lonesome. Kennedy has challenged me and others to do this, saying that the council won't help you. You're all going to have to go do it yourselves. I think we should do it ourselves, not because what Kennedy says, but because we need to do it. We need to have it. I will say one more thing before we resume this, that on Friday at the downtown committee meeting, the Riley Porter meeting, I asked Riley, who sort of ignored me for a bit, but then said, I asked her about the issue of the downtown mediation guidelines, the Celia Scott committee that put together a $10,000 study that approached merchants, approached homeless people, approached activists, and tried to find out some common basis for codes of conduct. And of course, the whole thing was shelved. I mean, it didn't actually work out the code of conduct, but it showed that that was a process that might well bear fruit. And I've actually called Kim Hallinan and Daniel Rubin, who put these together, and I haven't gotten a call back yet, but they were the two mediators paid by the city to do this. And Rotkin deep-sixed the study when he got into office as mayor, and Crone has not brought it up. I gave it to the city council again on Tuesday, and Riley claimed she'd read it, but she didn't mention it at all during the discussions, and it wasn't mentioned in the number of things written on the wall, though I guess it's called more of a solution than a problem. But the problem, of course, is the absence of non-police solutions to downtown, and that was nowhere in any of the stuff on the wall. That we're going to talk about the wall on Friday when Martine Bernal, the city staff member, and Emily Riley and Ed Porter were all, you know, busy taking suggestions, and also had a whole bunch of stuff up on the wall, 33 different items. 29 of them were all merchant items, and 4 of them were non-merchant items. You'll be able to hear from this tape, which is the city council meeting 3 days previous to that subcommittee meeting, that there were plenty of other items that people brought up, which Riley and Porter just didn't put on the wall. This is not on the agenda. It's not part of their concern, because their concern is a merchant agenda. And we have to understand this, and we have to present, put forward, and organize around our own agenda. Getting back to the city council meeting, item 27.
This project is on a very short timeline in order to deal with these issues. We hope to establish the committee tonight and to have it come back with recommendations within 2 weeks.
Ms. Riley?
Let's hear from the public.
Porter?
Let me just say that in the past year and a half that I've been on the council, each time significant groups from the public came forward and said, "Council, we want you to talk about this and we want you to take it into consideration," whether it was popular or unpopular, there comes a time when you've received so many requests that you take up the matter and you discuss it. And that's what I see that we're talking about doing here. It doesn't, there's certainly points of view on in many different directions on this question. But I want to indicate that this is the right thing to do, that we should discuss it, and that we should bring back to the council recommendations that we could consider in the short term and also in the long term. So obviously I'm going to support taking this action since I signed on to the recommendation. And I think that I see a lot of people lining up to comment, and I think perhaps we could put it into the context that I suspect we're going to do this, and so the comments should be along the lines of how should it work. And let me just say that my understanding of how this could be done in such a way that it could have some result this summer is it would be a typical council committee. The council has several either ad hoc or designated committees where there are three council members, and that as many people as we wish are welcome to participate. I can't imagine excluding anybody from these discussions. So for those people that are worried about being excluded from the discussion, I don't think that we're planning to exclude anybody. We're planning to hear all points of view. But my belief about the way we're recommending this...
Of course, people's points of view were clearly excluded 3 days later. So Porter either is not watching the ball or he is, in fact, misrepresenting what's going on. And I think it's probably the first. I think that Porter doesn't really have a clue around a lot of this stuff, just as he dropped the ball on the Camp Paradise, dropped the ball on the sleeping ban, has failed to advocate clearly and persistently for civil rights stuff that he's committed himself to. Well, I say it's the first that he's dropped the ball, but I think he also has realized that he's fundamentally compromised himself in these circumstances. And by the way, Ed, if you're listening in, you know, you might have the courage and consideration for the community to give a call and address some of these issues. You've been in office for 2 years, and you haven't gone on the radio and responded to any of these charges once yet that I'm aware of.
Will constitute the committee, and that we will have meetings where the interested parties will be present, and we will hear that testimony. We will make recommendations to the council near term, as the recommendations says, and that we will also make longer term and I guess I should just say long-term recommendations in addition. So that being said, I'd be delighted to hear what everyone has to say.
Ms. Riley?
Just as a piece of information, Charles Hilger, who is the director of the museum, has offered a room at the museum for free to meet him, which is a good neutral place, I think. So I really appreciate that. And also the committee will be staffed by the city manager's office, somebody, I'm not sure who. So it will be, we will have assistance to be able to get back with something that we're hopefully going to ask us to, not hopefully, we will be setting priorities, really strong focus. You know, here are 10 ideas, do this one. That's where I'm seeing this.
I'm looking at the council, the pleasure of the council as far as time limits and how long we're going to spend on this. I would like some direction. It is now 5:30. We usually break at 6 o'clock for dinner. We've been at this since 1:30 this afternoon. We will be back tonight with three large issues, which may take us close to midnight. How do we want to proceed, Mr. Fitzmaurice?
I would suggest 2 minutes. We have we need to discuss the outcome as well. We have fairly specific requests to just form a committee, so people ought to be able to comment on the formation of the committee, knowing that they'll have the opportunity to talk about specific issues to that committee.
Is there consensus up here on that?
I agree.
And what you hear happening is three interesting things. First, you see Crone abandoning his leadership here to ask others about how much time to set, instead of saying, we'll hear 3 minutes from each person, and if it's necessary, we'll go to tomorrow and talk about it. So he's limiting the amount of time. He's abandoning the right to allow more public input. Secondly, he yields to Fitzmaurice. Fitzmaurice, of course, is notorious. He set up the notorious decorum rules under which I was arrested in the Heil Crone matter, and he had people barred from lobbying in the public areas of the city council offices by an injunction that was overthrown by a judge. That's council member, Green Party member, I don't follow the Green Party platform on the homeless, Tim Fitzmaurice. Fitzmaurice also states here that he wants to limit the discussion to simply the committee, not any of the issues involved, even though the first meeting of the committee will frame its issues in terms of what is discussed here. So he's trying to essentially limit this to the input that has already been received, it sounds like. And he isn't successful in this, but you see where he's trying to go with this. And you don't hear any protest or correction from Crone or other council members about this. The public, of course, corrects it because they're determined to speak anyway, and there's enough of them to make themselves felt. But, of course, when individuals try to do this, like myself or other lone activists, they get shot down rather quickly, and if they try to protest, they get arrested. This is a form of repression at city council, mirrored by the repression on the streets, and it's a point brought out by Roxana Kustopachi in some of the public testimony. people are forced to rush through the subsequent public testimony, but I'm now going to play it because some of it was very good. And it was pretty much evenly balanced between merchants and others, although maybe the others, there was actually more people concerned about proposed repression downtown. Very few of the suggestions made by those opposing the repression made it onto the city council's city agenda for the subcommittee on Friday, 2.5 days later. And we will hear some of that after we hear this tape. For those who are still listening for the chalking arrests, keep listening. That's going to come a little later. My apologies.
I think that bears repeating that what we're asking for is people to address the formation of a committee. And just to let everybody know, this is going to come back to us, so we'll have another opportunity to comment on what the committee comes up with. Mr. Fitzmaurice?
Well, it'll take a half an hour to get through the people standing in line, if not more. I do want to take the hour dinner break. We may have to come back and have our conversation afterward. And maybe the people should be informed of that before they start so that we don't shock everybody. I think that it might be appropriate for us to do that after we've closed the public comment on this particular item.
Great. Thank you. First speaker.
Another piece of misinformation is given to the public that they may not be able to comment and act on what the city council, what the public has suggested, what the proposal is until they say after dinner, after they come back from the recess. In fact, what happened was they threw it ahead to 12:30 at night. So people sat for several hours hoping to hear a discussion, and instead Mayor Crone, this was his decision alone, announced unilaterally it would be thrown ahead to 12:30 at night. I suppose those who are very canny, as I suggested earlier, might say that he was doing this because that's one way of trying to kill the proposal, because you can always say at 12:30 we haven't got any public here, so we shouldn't do anything. And he indeed did try to do that at 12:30, as we will perhaps hear if we have enough time later in this program. However, again, it doesn't benefit the public to hear, to be misinformed about this stuff. But it's all part and parcel, and just the same fabric of contempt for the community, or you might say terminal inefficiency. I think it has to be a form of sort of surrendering to those whose agenda has to do with what the staff wants to do, what the council wants to do, not what the community wants to do. Because this obviously should have been discussed and dealt with all in one period of time. And could have been, but it wasn't.
And it's